Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mr. Pick Me and the Man Hater, a term lovingly given to us by a troll on the internet, even though I do not hate men and Chesco's been picked.
Yep.
Every time you do this.
I don't know what I'm supposed to say after that. Pick me is defined as...
Yeah, I guess that's probably some on me too, because I'm so used to starting my podcast.
Right, because you're good at it, and so it makes sense. It's like, oh, you actually know what you're doing. I think subconsciously you've just taken the entire the important part of the intro because you know I'm going to screw it up.
It's not subconscious. It's 100% a conscious decision. Because you'd be fine. Like, hi, hello, and we're here.
It's not hurtful when like there's data and evidence showing that you're 100% accurate.
I have the clips.
Yeah.
You're just more like, I feel like you're more of an organic starter versus I like things to be.
Well, it's kind of like, because I feel like you need to have some sort of a plan structure for a podcast to an extent. And like my entire page is not planned. Like I don't script anything. I don't even know what my videos are going to be that day till like wake up and turn on my phone and I'm like, let's see what comes out. Yeah, I don't know what my responses are going to be. People were like, oh, how long do you take thinking of those that commentary? I'm like,
zero.
It's the first thing that came out. I think of much better things that often way after it's published. I'm like, oh yeah, I could have been way more poignant there.
I've had that happen where I'm like, oh, that was a point I should have said.
Yeah.
or I missed something big.
The first comment is like, oh man, or this. And I'm like, yeah, that's, if I had put 10 seconds of thought into this, that would have been clearly the entire focus of what I should, or I should have at least mentioned it. I think I kind of have, it's more out of necessity for me, just because I'm working basically the amount of classes I teach is the equivalent of like a 1.5 professor's course load.
Half.
And so I'm a whole half professor.
One and a half.
Yeah. Well, it's because I'm supposed to teach 5 classes per semester.
Okay.
And I teach, right now I'm teaching 8 per semester.
8 total or 8 different classes?
8 different classes per semester.
Oh.
Yeah. And also in my district, so the average around the country, the average class size, and this is not what our topic is today, but whatever, the average class size. Yeah, for my particular class that I normally teach is around 24 to 25. That's considered to be like the optimal class size. Mine is 40 right now, and it was 45 so I teach 8 classes that are double the average size every semester, and I'm also trying to do this internet thing. And so if I were to script stuff, I would die. I would have to neglect my family in order to do anything. So
we have a video up, but the kids aren't fed. So
yeah, so I have to accept abject mediocrity online.
Whatever. It always goes well.
Occasional gold thrown in there. People like stories about how stressed and awkward I am though. So that helps out.
That's good. I think if that were me, at least 50% of the classes would be a movie. Like, come on in. We're watching The Little Mermaid.
What's the problem? I think the ADHD overcompensating thing of I constantly just think my classes are terrible. So I'm always doing extra stuff. And so as a result, even if I do half-ass it, it's still a fairly good class.
It's still too much.
Yeah, even it's still kind of like, all right, you're just calm it down, Jesco. And so it's they end up being, you know, I'm pretty happy. If what I'm doing on here ever made my classes suffer, I would stop this. Right. That's always been my like thing. Cause I that's still my it's shocking, right? That's a priority.
What about me? No, I'm just kidding.
I know. I'd still do the podcast. I would cut off TikTok.
It's so funny because like even if I'm tired, my fear of not being good enough supersedes that. So like even if I'm like, I'm not even gonna care about this, I'll do way too much.
Yeah.
Damn it. So I'm thinking, or you were thinking and you told me, and now I'm also thinking we should talk about some things that you went through recently.
It was a weird week. So I almost died. Theme song.
It's a theme song.
You want bad advice, man? I'll give it out gladly. I got some good advice for you.
No, you don't.
Advice for
you. No, you don't.
Like, no, you don't. Shit.
Okay. So what the hell happened? Let's get into it, because that's a very, very serious statement.
Right. Well, so last week, so I've been dealing with illness, random illness this whole past year, right? Where all of a sudden I'm allergic to different foods that I've never been allergic to. I'm having like horrible, like heartburn, like painful heartburn, nausea randomly. And I'm kind of writing it off to like, well, I'm 42 now. I guess that's old enough when your body starts rebelling against you.
I guess my body's shutting down now.
Well, and that's kind of what my doctors have told me too. They're like, well, you're getting older. You should try losing some weight.
I knew that was going to come up. They freaking love saying that.
Every single day. It's like, well, you know, just continue. Maybe if, you know, if you lose a few pounds, then we'll see if it continues. And, you know, maybe you can give up eating everything you love and exercise more and we'll see what happens. And don't get me wrong. I could eat healthier, and I am now because of this. I kind of have to, because I'm never going through what I just went through again.
Fair.
Or hopefully, knock on wood. But it's not bad advice to eat more vegetables.
I got some good advice for you.
Right? That was not the bad advice. The bad advice was ignoring what I found out to be like textbook symptoms of what I went to the hospital for, simply because I'm 42 and moderately overweight.
I'm shocked by how often that comes up, particularly for women. I mean, actually, it comes up for men. I guess men just don't tell me those stories. Maybe I'm not having enough dialogue about like what happened in the doctor's office. But because of what I post, obviously, I get into discussions about that. But I am genuinely shocked by how often women who, I would say women who aren't even overweight necessarily, but like any curvy, well, like anything that's not like underweight, they're like, oh, your hair's falling out and your legs don't work. Have you tried losing weight? Like what?
Well, I mean, there's definitely, I think you talk about intersectionality of oppression and marginalized groups. Like there's definitely fat phobia involved in medicine.
Oh, 100%.
There's obviously sexism is obviously there. And it, God forbid, you're a overweight woman of color, right? Then it's
horrible.
And that's like legitimate, like, or if you have a disability, there's all the underlying isms in our society that cause people to have, you know, discrimination against them and have a harder life are obviously present everywhere, including medicine. And that's the sad reality of it.
There are like medical professionals practicing right now who are not old, who are probably, you know, I hope not recently, but like at least within the like past decade, because I talked to a labor and delivery nurse who's an acquaintance of mine, and she was saying they literally taught that like people of color have a higher pain tolerance and like don't feel or I don't even know if it was that they have a higher pain tolerance, but like don't feel pain or something.
Yeah, one of my students did a speech on that a few years back where that's literally there is a it was put into text that these things were not, and the a lot of the reasoning behind it was, and this is where it goes back to why it's structural and not just someone with a bad opinion, because like a lot of the testing they do to find illnesses, to find how different medicines affect you, to find how painkillers work, were only tested on white men, right? And shockingly, those other factors that change the way we look, that change the way we present, that change our DNA, also affect the way medicine works against us, also affect the, you know, the symptoms of different illnesses. Shocking, right? But
I am shocked
because it isn't because men are being okay with it, because, and this is why you said you don't hear men talk about it, because even with bad healthcare, at the very least, the textbooks are still written about them.
Facts.
Right. Yep. And so when they see certain key markers, they can at least look it up on the textbook. And I know that is accurate for them.
Well, like gynecology, not to dive right into that.
Right.
Let's talk about gynecology. My favorite subject. But that was, this is going to be, I've read about it, but this is not going to be exact. But gynecology, like the practice was practiced on non-consenting women of color.
Right.
Like non-consenting that is, with no anesthesia. And the term woman became because they wanted to have a term, because when they were like, what is it? There's like the text, like the original gynecological text or whatever, was this guy, when he wrote it, he wanted a term that separated white women from females, meaning black women, to make it like okay what he did some like they're but they're not women.
It is horrifying. I remember hearing about
I don't know,
you know, I can't speak off memory the stuff, but if anybody listening to this wants to research it, it'll ruin.
It's horrifying.
It is absolutely it's the kind of stuff you'd read about in a dystopian novel, right? About something that's you wouldn't believe it's real, and then that stuff is present in, once again, shockingly, all throughout our society with most things.
So just
maybe
so,
not shockingly.
Not shocking. So Dr. James Marion Sims, the father of modern gynecology, beginning in 1844, performed experiments on enslaved women in Alabama. That's where it came from. You can look it up. We don't need to talk about it here necessarily, but I would be remiss if we didn't bring that up, because basically a lot of like what we know and like medical in the medical field is based off of prioritizing and focusing on white men while simultaneously like using women of, I mean, literally built off women of color, gynecology. And it's like, I think probably because you didn't give them access to medication. You know what I mean? When it's like, oh, they're tougher. It's like, was it offered? Do you think? Oh my God. That made me, I mean, I understand that. Well, I guess I don't understand. I try to understand how privileged I am, but that one, once I found that out, I did a ton of research on that, and it's like, whoa. And that's that's just gynecology. Like, I'm sure if you dive into any field. Anyways, so point being, gaslighting. gaslighting, and no, people aren't being taken seriously due to their race or their abilities or their weight. Like, it's fucking crazy.
Well, and so that's what, and so I start talking about this online, and that's what people are talking about. Like, what? They're, so now men are also, it's just everybody is
we're done
being
for.
Gaslighted. Doesn't matter who it is. So I guess back to not to,
sorry to derail you.
I don't know how to translate. We could do the entire episode on that, but, so on the major, so I was talking about the whole year it was going on and kind of being written off. And then, this, what is it, like a week and a half ago, like the first day of my kid's spring break, and by the way, we were going to go to Legoland.
Oh no.
And I was like going to catch up on my grading. It was going to be this great week. But so the first day of spring break, I'm like, let's celebrate. Let's order some donuts. And I noticed, I didn't really feel like a donut. And so I saw on the
red
menu,
flag right there.
Yeah.
Right there.
They had a breakfast empanada. And so I was like, oh, I'll try a breakfast empanada from, I'm not going to say the name of it because this ended up not being the case. But so I eat it. It didn't taste that great. Whatever. 3 hours later, I'm in the bathroom. What I think is food poisoning. We don't have to go into more detail than that. And I'm like, oh, of course, because everyone understands what I'm saying. Yeah. And so I'm thinking it's food poisoning. I'm like, oh, great. It's also my youngest fourth birthday party that afternoon. And so,
Chesco.
But here's there's a positive, the little positive bubble right here.
Okay.
Is that after like 3 or 4 hours of me thinking it's the worst day in the world, all of a sudden I feel good. Like for about, I'm like, oh, okay.
I'm healed.
That must just been, and I'm Googling online and I'm like, oh, food poisoning can pass about 3 hours. Sometime, best case scenario. I was like, oh,
yeah,
I must have got lucky. So I go to my daughter's party and it was fine. I wasn't hungry. I didn't want to eat anything, but I was able to be there and be present and help out and set stuff up and take stuff down. So it ended up, thank goodness for that. Anyways, I'm not going to go into details of the entire week, but it keeps getting, the next day it comes back up again. Like that evening, I start getting nauseous again. I'm like, oh man. Okay. And the next day I'm still, I can't eat anything. I'm so nauseous. I'm just, feeling terrible. And I'm still trying to function and live, but I keep on taking like long 2-3 hour naps cause I'm just feeling so miserable.
Yeah.
And it's getting worse and worse. And finally on day four, I haven't eaten in a little over 3 days at that point. Yeah. My wife is like, please go to urgent care and just have them, have them tell you you're okay.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, fine. So I go to urgent care And she's checking me out, and she's like, "Well, and you said you and I mentioned that what I ate, and I thought it was food poisoning. I shouldn't have said anything. I think that's I kind of put that in her mind." She was like, "Oh, okay. So we have an answer to this. We know what this is." And she was like, "Are you sure? Do you have any pain?" She's like touching on my belly, and I didn't have any pain there. And she was like, "Okay, so it's probably not your gallbladder." And I was like, "Oh, okay. It must just be food poisoning." And so she gives me some nausea medicine.
The one time the doctor listens to you, time you're like, I think it's that she's like, case closed. Thank God you're a doctor. Thank God you're a medical professional.
I was very confident that it was food poisoning. I guess that's what happened.
Yeah.
So she gives me the nausea medicine, and it's not really helping that much. It helps enough where I'm not like horribly miserable, but I'm still really nauseous.
That's
I'm still
bad.
In a lot of pain. Yeah. And so the next day happens, and I'm still feeling pretty bad. But then the next day, all right, this is day. I still haven't eaten, by the way, since the previous Saturday. This is on Thursday, I guess.
Oof.
I start feeling pretty good, and I'm like, okay, I must be on the mend. So I get up to record a video. I haven't posted the video online. I probably should. And I record it and about kind of my experience in urgent care because people were being jerks to the nurses there. I was like, it was basically this whole thing like be nice to our healthcare workers, you know. Even though we just talked about how doctors can misdiagnose and all those kind of things, doesn't mean you have to be like.
Especially it's not usually the nurses,
No, and so like just be nice to people. And so as I'm editing it, I'm looking at it. I'm like, my eyes look a little yellow.
Oh no!
And I was like, and I'm trying to like convince myself that I'm like, that can't be.
You're gaslighting yourself. You're like, I'm not yellow right now.
My eyes can't be yellow. Right. And so I go downstairs to my wife. And I'm like, are my eyes yellow? And she was like, let's look. And she was like, they're yellow. And I was like a very pale yellow. I was like, okay, bye. I'm going to urgent care. So I'm like, okay. Yeah. I'm going to urgent care right away.
Oh
that's not because I know. Yeah. And I come from a long line. I don't drink really at all. And because I come from a long line of alcoholics, like my grandfather died of cirrhosis of the liver. My father died from like drug and alcohol addiction. And so I'm very familiar with like yellow eyes as a result of like a liver. And so that's obviously literally triggering. I'm using that term correctly when I see that. I've done so much in my life to avoid that happening to me that I'm like, oh my God, what? This can't be happening. Yeah. So I go to the hospital. And the nurses look at my eyes, and I've had bad allergies. She was like, well, I noticed your eyes are a little distressed. It looks like it might just be allergies causing this. And I'm like, oh, okay.
The yellow in my eyeballs is allergies. Sure.
So I'm like, okay. But I mean, can we like check
it?
And so she was like, oh, yeah. No, we'll do a blood test in urine, but you're probably fine. I was like, okay. So we do the blood and urine test, the next morning she calls me up and she's like, okay, so you have a very high elevated level of bile in your system. I want you to go to the ER immediately. I already told them you're coming. And I was like, oh, and at this point, I woke up the next day and my skin was starting to yellow too. And so I'm like, okay. God. And I'm like trying not to panic, but I go to the emergency room. And they're doing the test and they're checking me out. And they're like, oh yeah, there's something's wrong. Right. We don't know what it is yet. And so the doctor comes to my room and then we're going to do a CT scan to check it out. And nothing shows up really on the CT scan. They wanted to see because he assumed immediately that I was having gallstones. There was something down there with that was causing the bile to back up and cone of a system. Mm-hmm. But they do a CT scan and nothing shows up. And he said, that doesn't mean you don't have stones. He was like, but there's three likely options here. And this is what I'm given in the emergency room. He says, you could have gallstones or something with your gallbladder. You could have liver disease, or it could be a mass on your pancreas.
Mm.
So I'm sitting there thinking, I know like how bad those second two were, especially third one.
Yeah.
And I'm obviously like seeing my life flash before my eyes. I'm like, oh my God. This could be. And he's like, so we're going to transfer you to the main hospital and get you a room and we're going to do an MRI and all this kind of stuff. So I'm like, holy crap. Okay. So I'm still like, I'm, you know, fingers crossed. I'm thinking, let's hope for the best. That's when I do the MRI. They're like, a lot of times stones don't show up on the CT scan. So he's comforting me and saying, so when the MRI, that'll show what's going on. And so they do, I go upstairs do the MRI. And then it's nighttime at this point. And they're like, oh, so the doctor will talk to you in the morning. So all night long, I don't have any results.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So the morning comes. Doctor says to me, all right, so there's no stones on your chart. And I'm like, or in the MRI. And I'm like, what is that?
What does that mean?
So what is that? And he's like, well, there is something. There's something in your gallbladder, like in the duct of your gallbladder, like it's like bulging. So we do think there's a blockage there, or it could be something applying pressure to it, like a mass. And I'm like, he was like, we can't see though from this scan. So we're going to have to do an exploratory surgery to look. And so and he tells me this right before they're taking me down to surgery, like 10 minutes. So I'm texting my wife, I love you so much. Blah, 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 blah. I'm texting and I'm like,
oh my God.
I literally wrote on like, I'm in a group with some friends of mine. And I was like, hey, will you, I'm going to tear up like talking about, but I was like, hey, will you guys make sure to start like a GoFundMe for my kids? If something comes out, I'm like, I'm freaking out.
Oh,
I was like,
I don't know what's going on. Your poor anxiety.
Yeah. And obviously I'm already a, like I over, what's the term? Hypochondriac, like literally when it comes to everything. And I'm thinking this is it. Doesn't matter.
Jessica.
This is what happens. So they take me down to the, surgery. And this is, thank God for this surgeon. Okay. This surgeon is, as far as I'm concerned, is my favorite person in this world. So where I'm laying on the table before we go down, he was like, what are you feeling? Cause he could see my eyes were like, kind of like red from like, I was like, well, I'm a little scared. This is what the guy said. He was like, I want to let you know. He was like, I can't tell you anything for certain based on what I'm seeing right now. Mm-hmm. Right. Based on what he's saying. He was like, however, I can tell you that based on your symptoms, I've been a surgeon for a long time. And based on your symptoms, if you had a mass large enough that was causing pressure to do this, we would have seen it. We would almost certainly have seen it on the CT. He was like, I don't think it's that. He was like, I can't guarantee. I want to be very clear. I'm not telling you it's not that. He was like, I would be very surprised if it's that. And I just don't think that's what we're looking for. And so that immediately at least helped me out because nobody had said that. That's all I wanted to hear. And
right,
I know
right.
It's not their job. I know they have to be realistic. I know they have to, you know, probably for insurance purposes and stuff. A lot of times they can't like, you know, they don't want to lead you astray, but I'm like, okay. So,
I mean, there's some people have a bedside manner and some people don't. Cause I've been delivered scary news by someone who was like kind of compassionate and like kind. And then other people were like, well, you might be dying, so we'll go check that out. Like, it makes a difference.
The other doctor, when I had talked to him, I was like, because he says that whole, the very, very matter of fact, well, it could be a master as well, and we'll do a biopsy and we'll check it out and blah, blah. I was like, what is that? And I'm like stumbling over my words.
Yeah,
like,
I'm sure.
What does that mean? Can you expand on that? Like, he was like, well, you know, and he's like, it could, you know, sometimes pancreatic cancer, sometimes blah, blah, blah. And I'm like,
oh my God.
And he's being honest. Like he's like, this stuff. Now, does it typically happen in a 42-year-old male that is, you know, that doesn't have any other signs and a history of these things? No. Like when I'm reaching, it would have been a very big stretch for my current symptoms with the current scans they had. Anyways, so the surgery happens. Yeah. And I wake up obviously on cloud nine because I'm drugged up on anesthesia.
Yeah.
And the best thing in the world. So the second I wake up, the first sentence from the nurse says, she says, so it was a blockage in your bile duct from, there were some stones in there. And I'm like, and ooh, that I heard exact. And I literally, I'm like crying, like sitting there, I'm smiling and drugged up and crying. And I'm like, this is, you all are amazing. You all, and I'm like, it's so funny. I wish I had recording of what happened there. But obviously it's like the best freaking news in the world. And I'm like, can somebody get my phone? Can I call in there? Cause my phone's in my room. And so the nurse gives me her phone so I can call my wife and let her know the good news. And so they do here's the weird thing though. They said normally, and this is from the words of the surgeon, is that they normally, when they go in to clear a blockage, right, your gallbladder looks like a bag of marbles. Cause there's so many stones in there. Normally that's what leads up to you. But my gallbladder was completely empty. That's why nothing was showing up on the scans. Hmm. He was like, it was really kind of a weird flu. He said, it's extremely rare.
Right.
Or for what my situation was. And so they're not even sure, long story short, we don't have to go too far into this now, but they're not even sure they're going to, they don't think they're going to remove my gallbladder at all, which is normal standard protocol for something like this, because they don't exactly know what happened. It looks like there might've just been a fluke. Something got stuck, like one, like a stone, because everyone produces certain fragments. And he said it didn't even look like it was one large gallstone. It was just like fragments of stones that were kind of just stuck together there. So it, as of now, it looks like it was just this random fluke of an instance that caused me to turn into a minion. And so
you're just lucky that way, I guess. It just, yeah. They all came together to ruin your life for a second.
Yeah, it is going to change my life forever though. Cause they still said, just in case I need to change everything about my diet. I need to have very strict everything. And it's, I'm trying to look at it in for the best, in the sense that, I could have always eaten healthier. I'd been slowly kind of transitioning. Although I did joke, I don't know if you know Andy Does Healthy online. She's a dietitian, registered dietitian, and she kind of combats a lot of misinformation.
Oh, good.
She's great. She's wonderful. But I met with her about a year ago to talk about like eating healthier and stuff. And and she's very anti like macros and anti doing. She's all about like doing all the good way of eating healthy.
Right.
Like, this is how like you sustainable, eat healthier, sustainable kind of lifestyle changes. And it's a very, and I laughingly said to her, I was like, well, after a year plus of trying to transition my life I was doing things on my own time. Yeah. Now I have to download one of those like fitness apps and log every single nutrient exactly how it is, maybe forever. So that was my week. Should I be presenting all my entire medical history to thousands of people?
I think it's fine. I mean, you weren't like probably, when I was 4 years old.
Right. I guess I'm not given to I don't know what somebody can't steal my identity by knowing I had a blocked tube in my gallbladder.
I don't think so. I think you're in the clear, buddy. Yeah, I mean, I also think it's important to like choke, like we're human beings and things happen to us. And I think it's important to like be real about that. Because I think sometimes people like, even if they have like a parasocial relationship with them, like I think people sometimes forget that like, you know, real shit happens to people who are personalities, I guess. But also I think everybody that follows you probably genuinely cares about your health and well-being. So it's like good to give people updates. So I'm glad you are talking about it. I feel like people notice when there's like a change, but not everybody's like when you like there's people I follow, like I can tell something's up with them. Like you don't know what, but you're like, oh, your energy is different.
And hopefully I won't get, because I've lost, I lost 14 pounds over the past, like, so it was bad. And so hopefully people won't be like, you look good.
I hate that.
What diet are you doing?
I've had that, like, I've learned, because sometimes people tell me they lost weight and I'm always like, on purpose, you know, like, did you want to? Right. And then if they say it, then sometimes we're like, oh, that's awesome. Because it's like, you have no idea why people lost weight. Like some people get healthier by gaining weight, you know, so I hate that. Cause there's been so many people who were like, got sick and then people are like, oh my God, you're glowing. You look great. And they're like, I almost died.
I lost a ton of weight in my early 20s when I was like, you know, going to the gym 10 times a week and dancing and all. And once again, I got more compliments during that time than ever in my life. I was so unhealthy. I was actually eating crap. I was broke. So my diet consisted of top ramen.
Ramen.
Right? And so my sodium levels were like, I didn't have salt. Yeah. I was literally just like, you know, my blood's slowly crawling through my body. But you know, I'm eating unhealthy. I was drinking a ton at the time, you know, I've looked nice on the outside.
And that's all that counts.
Yeah. I remember at one point what my mom said to me, I was like 24 at this point, and she was like, are you using? She thought I was like, cause you know, I come from I mentioned a second ago, we have a strong family history, an extended family history of users. And so she was kind of like, genuinely were, because I looked sallow, and it was because I was unhealthy. But that's what looks great.
That's so that pisses me off. So not mm-hmm. that specifically, but like, there's just this idea of like skinny is healthy,
right?
And that's so often not the case. Just like mm-hmm. having more weight on you, it's mm-hmm. unhealthy, and that's also not always the case. Like, mm-hmm. It's just so bizarro to me to, like, there are people who, like, are living with eating disorders, and, like, mm-hmm. everyone's like, you're the picture of health.
Right.
Like, you don't know – sorry, this is a tangent, but, like, no, you fine. Don't
it's
know
– what we do.
I know, that's all we do. You don't know what someone's going through when you look at them. You don't know if they're healthy or unhealthy. Like, people will just see mm-hmm. a photo. We'll see someone in passing and like, oh, they're healthy or oh, they're unhealthy. It's like, actually, you don't know shit about them and you really shouldn't right. be commenting on it. I just right. saw some I don't remember who the creator was because I never remember. But there's this woman who was like jogging or walking outside, and somebody from a car was like, get it, girl. You'll be slim and fit soon. And like the caption was like, you can't, like, yeah. I just can't live. Yeah. Everyone's got something to say.
No, you have to. Yeah. Well, I had a doctor once. She told me my goal weight, and you'll see why this is so even more absurd. She's like, you should be your goal weight at prime should be around 190. And I want to be, and I'm as a 6'5" man.
What?
Yeah. That story I just told, when I was like sallow and like sunken in, where I was 235 pounds at that point when I was like unhealthy skinny.
That's scary.
And I told her that I was like, I would die. Like if I was 190 pounds.
yeah.
I was, and I told her, and she was like, well, you know, that's the you know, according to BMI and blah, blah. I'm like,
that's not right.
I switched doctors literally that
immediately.
I switched doctors.
You're like, do you have a peer that you don't like? I'll go with them.
Yeah.
You have someone you wouldn't recommend?
You trust doctors. You trust institutions. And there are mm-hmm. a lot of great, a doctor saved, like literally saved yes. my life. If yes. it wasn't for those doctors doing that procedure, I would not yes. be here right now.
Sure.
You know, you hear about the ones that are doing, and even good doctors can give bad advice. Good people can give bad advice, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah, all the normal caveats. Yeah. But how many people though would hear that and think, okay, well, I guess my goal is now to get down to 190 pounds, and would make yourself seriously sick to get there. Right. How many, both men and women, but especially women are pressured into
yeah.
getting to these horror. Like my mom is another great, my mom is overweight. She's always been overweight. But she doesn't have bad, health issues from a weight perspective. Like the health issues sure. she has now are an age thing. Like they've come from other things, but they're always shocked. Like there that she doesn't have any, like she's not pre-diabetic. She's not, you know, she has good blood pressure. Her cholesterol is not high. And they're always like, wow.
Oh my God. And
like
it's
openly,
a miracle.
Like, that doesn't make any.
I had Sarah Spicer on here. She did my theme song on my other podcast.
Right.
She's so crazy talented. She actually lost weight, I think, because of a gallbladder issue. Right. but at one point, she was like, by her own admission, this is not me revealing yeah. anything. She was like scary skinny. She was burning off more calories than she was eating by working out like a psycho, like every day because her label made her. And she said she was just absolutely adored and given so many mm-hmm. compliments. And she was like, I was very ill. Right. I was like, I can't imagine what her body had to feel like to be. I mean, I'm hypoglycemic. If I did that, I'd probably keel over. But literally where she was like, yeah, I was burning more than I was eating. I'm like, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. But like even just this is kind of a segue, but like when I got diagnosed with PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder, which by the way is very serious because like I had like – suicidal ideation, even though I wasn't suicidal, my brain told me I was. Thank God I have
right.
bipolar because I'm used to being like quiet. That's not real.
Quiet, you
I know. Well, you do get that way, like as a, yeah. even with anxiety, like you'll have an and you just go, oh, shut up.
Yeah.
That's not real.
Yeah.
So I knew it wasn't real, but I thought it was mood related, but it was really bad. And it was like debilitating cramps. It was a whole situation. It was really, really bad. And I went in and finally I was like, hey, like I'm having all these symptoms. Right. And she was like, are you anti-birth control? Which I was like, at this point, just give it to me. I don't even care anymore. Like drug me. like because it was so bad. And I was like, I think I have PMDD, which again is very serious. And she's like, yeah, I think so. And I was like, were you going to tell me? Were you going to say anything? Because it's a big deal. It's not – it's like the week before your period, like it's a nightmare. It's like horrible mood swings, depression, like low energy, like all these like really weird symptoms that are – like I've just now started getting it under control, but I was debilitated for a while. And she was just like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
God, what if I hadn't asked? Like, what if I had not said?
And I'm not going to, like, it's not my job to, you know, release my wife's medical information, but like there were several things, like not that, but like other things, once again, where I'm researching, she's researching, and the only reason she got help was because we had to like diagnose ourselves her. Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm not saying diagnose yourself, but like,
no, but to bring it to the doctor,
do your own research and bring it to the doctor. Yeah. Cause a lot of people do. I don't want to be, cause people get on you about that, but
of course. Yeah. Yeah. It's not. Yeah.
I have this.
We're not going down that route. We're not like anyone listening.
Don't freak out. We're not saying
you should. Yeah.
Research your symptoms, look it up. Because that's what I did. I brought it because I had every symptom that I could find. Mm-hmm. And she was just so kind of calm and relaxed. And I'm like, yeah, I have suicidal thoughts. And she was just very like, okay. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I was like, this is ruining my life right now. Like, I don't.
Right.
And then she like, was on a lower dose of birth control. And now I like, I'm on it all the time. So I don't have a cycle at all. And she did. She started with a really low dose, and I guess you have to maybe do that, but it like didn't work. Mm-hmm. And then I got on the higher dose, and I was like, because I asked her, because my counselor was like, most of the people that I see that have PMDD will stop their cycle because it, if you have a mood disorder and you have PMDD, it's really dangerous. So much information. But she was just like, oh yeah, we can do that. And I'm like, why is it me and my counselor, like me researching my counselor, like, were you going to offer that solution up? Because it has substantially helped because now that because it's like the surges of hormones that like this at the start, right. That really caused the problem. And she had a solution of stopping it, which maybe she was being like conservative because birth control does other stuff to you. That's not great. But I was just like, I told you the same things I told my therapist. My therapist was like, you should try the year round one. And she's like, oh yeah, we could do that. Mm-hmm. Oh, PMDD, maybe. I'm like, what? Why am I the one bearing the burden of like this stuff?
Well, and you see it probably even more pervasively with anything like that, where it's like, it's invisible, you know, where it's not as obvious, like even with something as far less serious, like my ADHD, right? I'm 37, or I was 37 when I got diagnosed. And it was only because I'm like seeing all these things and I'm online. And I'm like, this is everybody, right? Yeah. This is like, everybody does this. And it's like, no.
No,
everyone doesn't just. And so I was like, well, because obviously the school system had let me, because I was smart. And so I finally meet with a doctor, and normally people like, you know, there's a whole process to get diagnosed with ADHD. He asked me like questions for like 5 minutes, and he was like, I'm going to just stop right here. We can go like, we can go do more, but you are like,
you're raging.
I can't remember exactly his term, but he was like, there's no question. I've been doing this for a long time, and you are one of the most like severely ADHD people I've ever met. Like,
what'd you say? I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
I'm lucky because I had the hyperactive. I still do, as you can hear and you can see. So like, if I didn't have that, I probably would have gone undiagnosed, but they were this child needs something.
I'm technically combined, but I'm more inattentive with mine. And inattentive is less common with boys. I don't know if it's just because they don't diagnose it with boys.
Probably. Or less. They're probably, like, girls, get in line.
Yeah, yeah.
Attention.
And that's exactly where it was. And it's so funny. There's like, and then once you get that diagnosis, it's not, and everyone's always like, you know, people always treat diagnoses like they're bad things, but they're, no, it's answers. It's tools, right? And you find all these things you thought were these weird, quirky things about you, mm-hmm. you have in common with literally every single other person. Yeah, not everyone, obviously, but yeah. And so my wife has ADHD and she was diagnosed, but mm-hmm. she's hyperactive like yourself. And so ours presents so differently.
Yeah, it's weird.
Mm-hmm. That in my mind, I was, oh, okay, I don't have it because I'm nothing. Like, we're like each other.
I don't have what that is.
Yeah, I don't. That's not me. I don't have that. Yeah. So clearly I don't. And then you learn about it and you learn about the spectrum of ADHD and combine and blah, 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 blah. But it's a tool. You know, it changes everything.
I loved getting diagnosed. Mm-hmm. I did it several times. I actually did
that. I just can't stop getting diagnosed.
Give me something. So I got diagnosed like a preteen as bipolar, mm-hmm. but I was on the cusp of when they were allowing teens to be diagnosed as bipolar. Because like before me, only adults were getting diagnosed, which is a big deal because depression is part of bipolar, right? So they would give them depression meds. And I don't know if you know this, but when someone's bipolar, if they're given a depression med, mm-hmm. they can go off the rails. Like instant mania, instant crash, like whatever. Uh-huh. Which did happen to me later when a doctor – here's a fun gaslighting doctor thing uh-huh. – I went to a psychiatrist and I had been diagnosed as bipolar for like years. And he was just like, no, you suck. You're just a shit. Basically, he diagnosed me as like being depressed with an attitude instead of bipolar. He's like, nah, you're depressed with attitude.
Oh my God.
So he changed all of my medication and then I went manic and crashed. And I was like, thanks, buddy. He also looked like the Mad Hatter, so it was very frightening. He did not like me. And he told my mom, yeah, he was like, nah, she's just kind of a jerk, which I was never like me. I don't know what that meant. I don't know what I said in there that he's like,
yeah,
he's just an asshole, I guess. But that happened to me once where the doctor's just like, nah.
No, let's not do that.
I'm going to make this brief.
Yeah.
But I also had a doctor almost kill me one time. I'll make this really brief, but it was a saga.
Yeah.
Basically, this is no joke. Speaking of yellow skin, jaundice, as it were. So I had a doctor here who was like one of the top in the area. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like very whatever. I'm going to make jokes in it because it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Stop it.
This is how we deal with trauma.
We are a serious podcast.
Yeah, as you brought up, I almost died.
We do not joke about serious.
This is how I deal with my trauma. Leave me alone.
Yes.
Okay. It's very healthy. So it was in high school and I like was, so you can like kind of edge on mania for a while. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a little bipolar spiel, bipolar info. But you can kind of without going to the point where like you're crashing, right? So mm-hmm. She couldn't like figure it out mm-hmm. how to curb it, I guess. Mm. So she made the absolutely logical decision to drug the ever living shit out of me. She shout out to all my Seroquel friends. So mm-hmm. Seroquel is a bipolar med, but it's like knocks you out. It's like a tranquilizer. It's like,
okay.
Because here's the fun fact, Chesco. If you're too drugged to function, you don't have symptoms. So, solves her problem. It's, hey.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, fuck me, I guess. Yeah. But so she starts drugging the ever living shit out of me. I was on lithium also. So there's two drugs she was over medicating me with, not even just one. Lithium, you have to check your blood levels because it's toxic. It's literally like kind of like a poison. you can kill someone with lithium.
Yeah.
So you have to get your blood taken like every whatever amount of weeks. And at the level I was at, it should have been regularly. Mm-hmm. Regularly.
Regularly.
It's still in my system. Right. Technically it is, but it's different dose.
Yeah.
Which is also scary. Anywho, I remember one time, like I was so drugged by, like I was passing out all the time, like falling asleep, like standing. I fell asleep in her office. Like I had a coffee cup and I was drinking it and I couldn't hold it up because I was so drugged. And then she let me drive to school.
What?
Yeah. That's yep. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorites about her. Literally, she took it out of my hands because God forbid I spill coffee on her carpet. And then she's like, see ya, go jump on that highway. Like, literally, she knew I was driving. Mm-hmm.
I don't have any jokes to her. It's like, oh my God.
The joke's
God.
On me, Chesco. That's the joke.
Oh my God.
So it's bad. So I could tell you so many more stories about that. But so I gained like 40 pounds. I was like in high school. Like I was like 16, 17. And none of my teachers told my parents, which was really like, I went from a straight A student to like falling asleep all the time. And they're like, this is fine. She's just tired.
Puberty. It's, is she getting her period now?
It's her period. I bet.
It's anxiety.
Right. And I'm such like a loud, fun, you know, like I have a big personality and I just went zombie. Like literal zombie. Like I was like The Walking Dead, like truly. And I couldn't think straight. I couldn't like speak. Like I couldn't articulate how I couldn't like do anything creative. I'm like, I write, I do music, none of that. I did some theater, but it was a struggle. So finally, like I started noticing like my skin was yellow. And my eyes, exactly what you're talking about, was like yellow. Like I have photos where I literally have yellow skin, like yellow. And so my mom was like, I know this doctor keeps, because she was saying over and over, this is how it has to be, basically.
And you want to trust your doctor, you know, it's like you want,
she's scaring her,
because you want a solution. You don't know what to do at this point. You're like, okay, well, this is somebody that I have been told institutionally that I should be trusting without question because they're trained, they have expertise. And for a lot of things, that's true. But like, you know, you have to have a healthy distrust of certain things. I know of my own stories as well, some of which we've said, you can just tell something's off. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think when you feel that feeling, it's healthy to follow up. But and obviously back then we didn't have as much access to, you know, I was in the hospital reading, you know, published peer-reviewed journals I'm actually going through like actual research databases trying to find information. I couldn't have done that when I was 16 in high school in the 90s.
And I was so drugged that like I couldn't like articulate like. Right, I'm dying. Right. Finally, I go to a new psychiatrist, and I'm in her office for like two – like I swear to God, under 5 minutes. And she like was like, stop. Is this how she is all the time? Because some people, they take a medication, and it kicks in, and then they'll kind of even it out. And my mom was like, yeah. And she's like, we need to go to the hospital.
Wow.
She needs to get blood drawn immediately. And guess what? I was lithium toxic.
Wow.
So it wasn't even the Seroquel, the thing making me sleepy. Uh-huh. It wasn't even that. So when my liver was shutting down, that's why I was turning yellow.
Wow.
So we got a new doctor, and then it took me probably a year. Mm-hmm. Like to heal my liver. My stomach was destroyed by the medication. Yeah. I used to get sick all the time. And then my brain wasn't working. So I had to get that back because of cognitively I was so over medicated that I was like,
right.
I dropped out of school, went back into school. And then I was was straight A's and, you know, continued that path. Like, did you guys teachers, did you guys notice that dramatic shift?
Well, we just noticed you weren't like interrupting us talking anymore. So we figured it was kind of,
that's the thing. Know? It's like, literally it's that I was probably less annoying, I guess. Right. But that shit is, I ran into her, like I didn't talk to her, but I passed her at a grocery store like years later. And I went into fight or flight when I fucking saw that lady.
I bet.
Cause I was like, I should have decked her. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Cause we didn't even, she never got any repercussions for that. Cause we were so free. We were like, trying not to die. Right. So.
Well, that's, I mentioned when I posted about this online, one of my friends who's dealing with some other, her own health issues says, do you have any advice on how I can get my doctor to listen to me? And I said, and I jokingly responded, cause that's what we do. I was like, well, it helped that I was, you know, completely yellow walking in. And then another person responded. She was like, I'd show up completely yellow. And my doctor would be like, have you tried just going for a walk for your anxiety? It's probably
have you tried losing weight?
Have you tried losing some weight? Have you tried? And it's true though.
What some people are doing is like making the doctor put on the record. like on the file, like, I have requested this be checked out and you are refusing to check that out. And that has worked for people.
Yeah, that literally happened to me. This is about 5 years ago now. Another, once again, being ignored. I kept on complaining that I had, I was having some issues breathing.
Oh, Jesus.
And I have asthma, very mild asthma. I use my inhaler like once a year, like almost never. And the problem is I have, for whatever reason, you know, some things are genetic. I have a huge lung capacity, right? And so they, when
screw
I,
even you.
So,
even,
I know.
My asthma's so bad. I'm like,
yeah, no, but so, and so I go in there and so they give me, you know, they test your lung capacity. Mm-hmm. And so I'm I can tell I'm not breathing normal,
right.
But I do the little thing and it goes off. It's like off the charts. It's like, well, it can't be your lungs. And I'm like, okay,
it is.
And so I keep on, but I'm like, you know, every night I'm going to bed, like I feel like I can't get a deep breath. And so I'm getting enough oxygen. My blood oxygen was fine because I have such a big, but I just feel like I can't fill up my lungs. And so finally, I literally saw a meme that talked about exactly what you said. And so I go in again and they said, well, no, you're looking fine. I was like, okay, can you put on my chart that you don't think I need an x-ray or like a to get my lungs checked?
Yes.
And they're like, you know what? Let's just do it just to be safe.
Actually, maybe we will.
I had walking pneumonia for a month.
Oh.
And that's the only reason. The only reason they got it and I got antibiotics for it was because I did that exact thing you're talking about. It works.
There is a thing about it. And like even when my wife, like when she did her whole pregnancy, I was like so aggressive, like to make sure she was taken care of. And like I had everything lined out and like to make sure what she wanted was happening. Because there are horror stories of like, you know, stuff happening in the hospital, you know, that women don't like or don't want. And like, but that's where I really learned like how much, and it took it not being about me. Like, because I used to, had 100% trust. It's not that I distrust doctors, but I like blindly trusted them. Like they could have said anything and I'm like, okay. Because to me, it like triggers the like authority people pleasing. Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah, you know more than me. I'll do what you say. Right. Like, be a good, my dad's also a dentist. I think like I have this like ingrained, like be a good patient.
Of course, yeah.
I
totally understand that thing though, when it's like someone you care, because I know, once again, we'll keep this trauma light, but when we had a horrible tragedy a few years back and we couldn't get someone to like a mental health professional to like talk to either of us. It happened at the hospital. Like they were aware of it. And so I'm like, and I could, my wife was, it was real. I was really worried. Like I was like, this is not you. Like I was so terrified. And so I'm like calling, I'm going to the hospital calling to the point where they like finally called her to make sure that she was safe and that I wasn't like trying to get access to her medical. Cause I'm like, I keep calling.
That's why they call.
Yeah. Then they're worried. So finally, at that point, because they called her about me, they're like, someone's trying, your husband looks like he's trying to meddle with your medical record. And it's basically because I keep calling, like, can somebody fucking call my wife and ask her if she's okay?
She needs check.
She needs some help.
Yeah.
I have insurance. Like, why can't we get this? And so, not to mention, and finally that happens, it took me 6 months to get 6 months for them to call me, for me to mask over the phone and then for them to say, okay, well, it doesn't sound like you need anything. We'll move on. Right. So mental health is even worse than I never even got to see a therapist for that whole situation because I sounded so good over a 5 minute phone call.
That's what we do. We're professional bullshitter people pleasers. Yeah. I guarantee you and I could both experience a very traumatic event and take a phone call and be like, hey, how's it going?
Hey, girly.
What are you doing? How are you? And you'd be like, fine. I'll tell you what, though. Yeah. I used to at least be honest about my mental health. When I became a parent, I started lying about it. Like, I literally would just not be honest. Like, people be like, how are you doing? And I would be having the worst fucking day. Like, especially with the newborn phase, you know, when you're just, like, not sleeping. Mm-hmm. They'd be like, how are you? And I would be literally, like, hadn't showered in days.
Yeah.
Flyaways flying, like, covered in vomit. You know, just, like, disgusting. And be like, great. How are you? You know, I'm like, what the hell?
That's the pressure, especially with parenting. I think especially you get that, that pressure to be perfect.
Yes.
And every time I talk about that online, I'll get a bunch of people like, what are you talking about? Everyone only talks about how terrible parenting is. And I'm like, no, that's not the real, that's online.
Yes.
Right. That's the online-ness of this is different than the real world, where if the second you don't present yourself as perfect and everything, you are less than. And even then, anytime I've shared a story about struggles with being a parent, the amount of people that will comment saying, well, you shouldn't have had kids. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear what you're talking about. You're clearly not doing enough, and all those other yada, yada, yada that goes into it. And so it's this weird thing where you do hear some of the hard aspects of being a parent.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you chose to be a parent. It's like, that I there's lots of things that I love that are also very hard, right? I love being a parent. I absolutely love being a parent. It's still fucking hard. And most of the hard things are because of society.
Yes. It's also, it's like this, there's few spaces you can be totally honest. Like, I wouldn't be unloading that the hardships of parenting, like at my daughter's, like amongst the moms, because it's like, you don't want to look bad. I think now I would, but especially when I was a new parent, or like on the playground, like, you want to make friends, but there is such a stigma if you talk about it. And again, like, I feel like it's made to be a reflection of your parenting. Mm-hmm. Or you feel like it's a reflection of your parenting.
Right.
But it's just interesting. Like, that was the first time that I was very, because I've always, like, you know, I'm people please. Like, that's just the way of the, like, I've hid my emotions. Certainly in like times of like, I don't want to burden anyone right now. But yeah, when I became a parent, I was like, really locked it up, except on my page where I would make content about it. But like interpersonally in my actual life, I'd be like, I'm just going to be miserable, I think. Right. Also, that's how I went undiagnosed with PMDD for so long. I thought a lot of my symptoms were just, I was like, this is fine. This is just parenting. And it wasn't. So
it was not.
Yeah, I guess my point is, like, because there's got to be a point to this, right? It's like advocating for yourself, advocating like what you're feeling. Mm-hmm. If someone's giving answers that aren't lining up and you're not getting relief, like, it's important to. And even then, like, maybe people don't listen. But like, I mean, I've gotten different doctors. But like, the more that I've learned to advocate for myself, the better results I've gotten, because you can't just assume they're going to do what they're supposed to, because that's always the case.
No. And apparently not even if you're a man anymore.
And now the men are getting
apparently it? Man, apparently I am the real victim all along.
Now that I'm seeing negative consequence.
Don't you feel so bad for me?
I do feel bad.
Now things will change.
Jesco's been harmed by this. Change what? Everything.
Ugh.
A man has received differential treatment? Yeah. No.
We need to rehaul the entire medical system.
Oh, man.
You laugh because that's – but it is – honestly, if it gets to the point where more men are being harmed, that will be the thing that triggers systemic change, because they're not – it doesn't matter that literally you can't even put a number on it. Countless women and that's the wild thing. So I posted about this, and it's been the most commented video I think I've ever had.
I think
within like, the first like 2,000 views, there were like 1,000 comments on it. And it's just all women telling me, yep, this is what happened. Here's what happened. Here's what happened. Here's what happened, of them just being gaslit by their medical professional. But that's just ignored. And it's like almost just starting to be talked about a little bit more. With it, and even though it's been obviously happening for as long as we've been alive, obviously longer than that.
I feel like maybe white people are talking about it more, because I definitely think people of color, and particularly women of color, have been like, hey, sucks. Right.
Well, and it's a good example, though, of like, you know, when you ignore what's being done to more marginalized groups, eventually it seeps out. It's like when you see, there was a video, once again, we're both so bad at this, I don't remember who it was, but it was a gay creator that was talking about how this, responding to this video of these two gay men that were like saying they support J.K. Rowling and her transphobia. And he was like, you know, they, the same monster that she is a part of, that is eating trans people will eat you too, right? Yeah. That will eventually, it's all going to come, you know, eventually. And this is another example, just because what's not harming me, it's just harming them. Then all of a sudden, oh, now it's this, now mm-hmm. it's this other group. Oh, now it's this other group. Now it's this other group. Mm-hmm. It harms us all. Right. And that's why it's important to speak out, not just when it freaking hurts you, but when it, when you see harm, that's when you should speak up, not just when your life is inconvenienced.
But I'm fine.
Shocking. Shocking. Right?
I've always been so deeply disturbed by like the fact that so many people on this planet will not empathize yeah. at all. Unless you relate it to them, like all the mm-hmm. guys who are absolute misogynists. And then mm-hmm. you're like, imagine if this was your mom, but imagine mm-hmm. if this was your daughter. And they're like, oh right. my God. And now I care about women. Like, yeah. but it's not even empathy because it's about them.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that they're not empathizing with anything. They're mm-hmm. literally just thinking of, oh, if this affected me.
And even then, most of them still won't change until it like something really extreme happens.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It has to literally happen to them.
They can see their daughter experiencing yeah. systemic, you know, sexism mm-hmm. against them. And it's still, well, that's what life is. That's what
boys
we
will
do.
Be boys.
And it, yeah, it's not until it's a horrible, you know, we don't need to go into that, but like it's real specific tragedy that you can't then all of a sudden, like, I can't believe I didn't see this earlier, even though it was white in front of my eyes.
It's like, if you have to literally make it about you, mm-hmm. then you have an empathy problem. Because I was thinking about the other day, there's so many times I've done that in conversations with men mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. even like was talking about race issues. Like, imagine yeah. if you, you know,
right.
and it's like, we shouldn't have to do that. That's so weird. Like, mm-hmm. we're basically saying, obviously you can't have empathy. So what if it impacted you? And right. we act like that's totally fine and like a reasonable mm-hmm. way of communicating. It's like, no, that's kind of a big deal that like I have to literally make it about you for yeah. you to care. That's like,
yeah,
that's rough. Cause I used right. to do, that with guys all the time and then be really like pat myself on the back and be like, oh, I really got through to him. Now that mm-hmm. it's about him, he really saw my side. It's right. like the fact that I had to do that is really rough. That's not good. Yeah. That's not good for you.
And that lasts for all of 20 minutes until they go hang out with their friends. And all of a sudden that like
that bitch.
Yeah. That's there was that whole conversation about, and this is the whole nother episode title we could do. We're not going to get into this, but about like, can men be friends with women? Right.
Oh, and if they're and like, or that's you can our judge next episode.
By, yep. Yeah. The, yep. But you can judge people by who their friend. I think it's fair to judge people by who their friend groups are.
100%. You should do that.
Yeah, that says a lot about what they're willing to put up with, what they're willing to listen to when the camera's not on, right? When they're not in a public setting.
If anybody takes anything from this, actually, there's tons of stuff to take from this episode. Yeah. But here's something also important. If you're like, you know, he's great, but his friends are assholes. He's great, mm-hmm. but his friends are misogynist, or he's mm-hmm. the nice one, like, but his friends are whatever, any type of anything that's negative. Like,
right.
I hate to break it to you, but he's also those things when you're not around. Right. Like, that is the secret. At the very least, it's not a deal breaker, and that's a problem. Like, right. I cannot tell you how many guys I was around. But it could be any gender. It could be any person. Right. But for me, a lot of times it was guys that I was right. around that I was like, God, his friends are so awful. And, like, they're so mature, and they say stupid jokes.
So
but
weird.
He's the good one. And I'm like, no, yeah. you idiot. You idiot.
He must be such a good influence on them.
At least he's the good one.
It's good that he must be hanging out with them because he wants to change them.
I mean, like, literally the second I walked out the door, I guarantee he was like, oh, stupid, yeah. dumb woman. Anyways.
Yeah.
Oh, God. It's like, yes, judge people by who they're around 100%. That's yeah. who they're like. That means whatever behavior you're seeing is not a deal breaker to them. And like, right. even there are situations where people have had friend groups for 20 years, but it's like, it's still going unchecked, and that's still a problem. Even mm-hmm. if there's something, say that the rare case where they actually don't agree with the thing that their friends right. are doing, like, it's not a deal breaker.
Right.
It's not enough to like, cause like, I never saw it go checked. That's not like they said something and then my boyfriend's like, hey, don't say that.
Right.
Like, that's really not cool.
Only not in front of, not, yeah. don't
she's
do that
right
in front
there.
Of, you guys, do you not see her?
I literally had one time where this guy I was dating who was just a garbage person. He was very, very mean. He bullied me into dating him, literally. Anywho, that's a story for a different time. But they would literally like joke about things that were like personal information about me in front of me. And I'd be like, I feel like you're saying things behind my back or something. And he's like, I don't know where you came up with that. He's like, that's crazy.
I would
crazy.
Never do that.
That's why are you crazy? Why are you insane right now? Plot twist, everybody. He was talking massive shit.
Yes, of course. Shocking, right? Shocking, shocking future Reagan to no end that this was.
I look back and I'm like, you idiot. Yeah. I mean, they were literally talking about like things I had done. And I was like, that's weird. They weren't there for that story. Judge people by the friend groups. I will absolutely. I will.
It's funny too, because in the college, because I've never had like I actually have two. My two best friends in the world are two guys that have very similar worldviews that I do now that I managed to meet over the years. But over for most of my life, people have always been, don't you have like boys that you hang out with? I'm like, no, because every time I do, there's always at least a couple of them that are fucking
assholes.
Horrible. And I'm like, oh, well, I don't want, that's not what I want in my life. I'd rather, I'm happy just hanging out with other people. Like I don't need them. You know, if I have one or two good friends that are like, that I know are not going to say something one day that's going to make me question our entire reality, then I'm okay with that.
And the other thing is like, whatever you see from the boys, or even if it's, it could be, they could be being sexist, racist, homophobic, whatever. Whatever you see is a tenth of the real.
Because
I remember, I've talked about this, I think, before, but I worked at an agency. And like when I started there, I don't think I was out yet. And then by the time I was full time, I was out with my wife, like out. And I've said this, like some men like don't get lesbians. They're like, oh, you must hate women like we hate women. The misogynist, I mean, not the good ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The good guys, like, it made no difference. They're like, oh, cool. I also like women. So, cool. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's the opposite.
We have that in common.
The misogynists are like, oh, you also hate women. Anyways.
That's
Yeah, I'm like, well, what? Do you hate women? There's a point where you're like, I think you hate women and like men. I don't know what's going on.
I'm a lesbian because I like women. Do you not understand?
Yeah. I like them very much. I love women in general as a whole.
Yeah.
But anyways, like I started being privy to conversations that I was like, what? The same dudes. So like I had seen them, and then all of a sudden, I don't know why they thought, oh, she's one of the boys, I guess. I have no idea. And they it was, you know, I would call them out. So they stopped doing that because it wasn't fun. But they would just like say shit about their wives, wanting to cheat on their wives. Like that was what was talking. And then I found out a majority of them were cheating on their wives, which I didn't know that at the time. So also, if you hear a guy making a lot of cheating jokes, they're not jokes a lot of the time.
Or also super worried about cheating. And super,
projecting.
There's a reason that's on their mind a little bit. Not always.
Yeah.
They could just have some really insecure attachment kind of issues. But it's usually like literally every guy I know that is like a really good guy and is a relationship is never
not saying that shit.
is literally, they don't bring it up. It doesn't. And I did not even know it was such a big deal in the like the dating community until I got online and was watching, seeing these videos. I have never, well, first of all, I've never been cheated on and I've never worried about being cheated on. Because and like I think we even sent this like, and I don't know if I think it was on your podcast a while back. Like, good people can still be cheated on, right? That's not to say
a good guy
and or a good woman, whoever, whatever, however
any gender, any gender,
people can be cheated on, right? That
of course
is not saying that, but it's not something that is just this. If it is a constant theme in your life where you're having
something's
to worry about it, there's something else going on there.
The guys who talk about it, I feel like, just don't date women. Like, I just don't. They're like, these women are always cheating. I'm like, I don't think so.
Are they? Yeah. Well, who are you? Yeah.
Who are you dating? Like, were you dating? Or, you know, here, this is just something that came to me. Maybe they weren't dating them. Maybe they just liked them and they just started dating other guys. Like, oh, cheating. It's like, I don't think you were dating her. I think you liked her from afar. Oh yeah, I don't. Yeah, well, that was a big eye opener. Was when I was like, oh, this is how. And do you ever? Yeah. I don't know if you've had this happen. I, But like I had like guys who kind of treated me like work wife. Have you heard like work wife and work husband?
I've never been an experience with that, like the whole work wife thing. I've heard of the idea. I don't know if I've mainly obviously, and academia is a very male profession. And so I do think it's probably not, although the people I do hang out with at my, like at any of my previous universities or colleges I've taught at have been other female professors. Yeah, I guess those have been my work wives.
Just a harem.
Yeah, it's just this harem of work wives, meaning my friends, because you can't just say this is my friend.
Yes.
You have to gender it and turn it into this weird pseudo-romantic thing. Like instead of just saying, oh, this is my friend, Professor, you know, Reagan. No, this is my work wife. Because we hang out and have lunch because she's not a dude. Because did they call a guy that they're really close with and hang out with their work husband?
This is Greg. He's my work husband.
The work husband? No, it's only because they can't fathom the idea of a friendship with a woman. And so it has to be their work wife. Anyways.
Here's the thing, though, is that like one guy called me his work wife, which I was like, because he and I did not like – I have chemistry with a lot of people.
No, for sure.
Yeah, but even he and I didn't even have, like, we didn't, like, banter. We were, like, bros, like, bros.
Right.
Like, I have guy friends that it's very, like, bro-ish versus, like, I can banter with people, but.
I know certain guys that, like, it's a weird, not that I'm close with, but I've seen guys do this where they find out you're, like, if you're a lesbian.
Yes.
And all of a sudden they're like, man. You're a man.
I talk to you like a man.
Yeah, that you are literally, so that whole bro-ness, because in their mind, that's, I feel like it's like this, they're a way for them to try to convince themselves not to be attracted to you because like, you're a dude, you're a guy.
Or you're off limits, even though non-consenting is off limits. Someone doesn't like you, should be. Yeah. But like that, you know what, honestly, unless, as long as they're not being a misogynist, bro, like, I don't mind that. Cause then I'm like,
that's fine.
If you're not flirting with me, that's good for me.
If that's what it takes. If that's what it takes,
bro,
fine.
It's come here, bro. But that guy who called me ended up being absolute trash, was a predator. So I was like, oh, well, that's probably why he called me his work wife. Cause he's a fucking weirdo. But also another guy, it just makes me laugh. I remember we were working together and he was like, he kind of treated me like that. Like, because a lot of men are not joking. Like when they say that they're having inappropriate relationships with women, especially emotionally, even if they're not pushing it past anything. And like the red flag is if they talk shit on their partner, that's when you know, okay, this is going a weird direction. That's always how I know. If anyone talks, like particularly men, but like anybody's talking shit on their partner to me in like a leading kind of way, I'm like,
it's
oh,
the difference
flagged.
Between like, oh, we're really close, I'm struggling.
Yes.
Can we, I trust you. Can we talk about this versus?
It's not that.
Yeah.
God, my wife did this again. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, let's talk about this.
Wrong audience. But I remember the guy looked me dead in the face and was like, God. I don't think we were engaged yet, but we were together and he was engaged. He's like, God, if you weren't gay, we would literally be a perfect match. And I was like, wrong on all counts, my guy. You were someone I would have dated in high school probably, but it's like, oh, it was so, I literally like looked at him and I was like, oh, we're not friends anymore. Sayonara. And I stopped being his friend. Like we were not close after that. When guys are joking around about that kind of stuff, or anybody, it's like pushing boundaries. They're pushing boundaries with you. Just be careful because sometimes they're not joking. Like I thought the jokes, I thought it was shitty. I thought they're being misogynist, joking about like cheating and stuff, or talking about their wives negatively. A lot of times it was like my boss, which I'm like, okay, I can't really push back too much up here.
Yeah.
But it was like it ended up not being jokes. It ended up being very real. So.
Well, speaking of cheating, we're going to be cheating on our normal version of doing this show next week when Dr. Naya Papaya comes on.
I love her.
Yes. That was a good transition, right? Was that?
You nailed golden, that. Right? I was like, where are we going? But yes, 100%.
So next episode is going to be a nice little change of pace.
Naya Papaya is now Dr. Serious business.
We'll have to ask her if she wants to go by her, like, if that, what name we should introduce her by and not just her TikTok.
Dr. Papaya.
Dr. Papaya. She has a real name.
She has a real name. I just don't know if she uses it on socials.
I don't either. That's why, yes.
Yeah. But yeah, her content is amazing. She has a lot of feminist content backed by research and data, even though that doesn't mean anything to the people who are arguing with her. But that'll be amazing. And make sure to check out our social stuff, which we have an Instagram and a YouTube.
Mm-hmm. And Instagram is updated frequently. That's the one I'm really focusing on making sure.
Thanks, Jessica.
Right now. So that one I have control over. And we have a merch store that is linked in our show notes with three things.
We're getting there. We're doing our best. It'll happen. We have a lot going on. You know this.
We do. I almost died.
Oh, God. Well, thank you for listening, everyone. Make sure to check out all of our links and things you can click underneath this episode. And we will see you and be joined by Dr. Naya Papaya next week.
Bye.
Bye.